Morning. Well, my family always looks forward to tonight because it is the most exciting couple of hours of watching the best commercials we're ever going to see. You know, we have this great tradition in our family where we will sit down with all of our Super Bowl snacks and food. And during that first half, we will watch all of those wonderful commercials and vote on which one is our favorite, and maybe stay up for Bruce Springsteen and the halftime show, but after that, we're in bed. And tomorrow morning, we will wake up, and someone along the way will say, "By the way, who won the game?" And I will usually answer, "Oh, there was a game in between those commercials?" For us, it's all about the commercials. Some would say we are forgetting about the most important part. We're missing the point. Well, I think that's what this gospel story is about. Missing the whole point. I have read and studied and preached on this gospel since I was a seminarian. And it wasn't until this past week when I really got serious, even more than I have before, about digging into this and getting in my own personal imaging of Scripture and study, that I think I finally got a better idea as to what's going on here. I think I was missing the point before. Because I always think of this crazy guy, we even see it in film depictions, of this monster kind of man with these demons that comes out, and Jesus says, "Silent, come out of him," and immediately he's a normal guy again. I think that is totally off base, based on what's really going on here. Jesus and his apostles go to Capernaum. It's a city that still exists. It's on the northwest shore of the Sea of Galilee. It's a fishing village. And I think to get in touch with what is really going on, we need to understand the proximity of Peter, and Jesus was living with Peter at the time, and this synagogue itself. I have a small clip that we're going to try to play, and it depicts real quickly just how close those two are together. Let's see if we can get it to run. There is the ruins of that synagogue. That is a 4th century synagogue that is built on top of the one from Jesus' day. But as that cameraman starts to turn, you are going to notice that there are ruins of a little village that's right next to the synagogue. And you see the foundations of these old homes. And if you look off across that little plaza of homes, there is a taller structure that is a church that has been built. And guess what it's built on top of? Peter's house. See how close that is to the synagogue? They say it's about 500 feet. Now, think about this. The synagogue was the place of instruction and teaching. You wanted to worship, it was more at the temple. This is where the men went for their instruction and teaching. There had to be a synagogue arranged for in every town where there were at least 10 men. This was the neighborhood synagogue. Obviously, it was Peter's synagogue. Obviously, it was where Jesus and his buddies went as a synagogue. Now, think about this. Here is this man in the synagogue. Now, if he was some crazed fool, he would have never got in the door. The bouncers, the ushers, would have caught him ahead of time and said, "No, thank you." But he was in the synagogue, and they had to have known him. He was from that little village. This was the guy that they had known. This was a guy who was there every Sabbath. This is the guy whenever there was something going on in the synagogue. He was the guy that a lot of times we think about as, well, you know, we know Uncle Charlie's got a drinking problem, but, you know, we just laugh about it and let it go. We know Uncle Charlie has a problem with abuse, or we know when Uncle Charlie's around, you better keep your hand on your wallet because, you know, he's got a little thievery problem going on. There was something that this guy had that was not of God. That's the word that is used here when they say unclean in Greek. There was something not of God. We have the word catharsis in our language that comes from the Greek. This is the opposite of that. There's something that is not of God whatsoever. But it must have been something that was inside of him, and he could put on a pretty good face, and he could walk around looking like a normal person, and nobody would have noticed until the eruption that there's something wrong with this guy. Now think about this. I'm sure you have been in a situation, and this is what I really think this is about, where there's something going on in somebody's life that's not good. And they get into a discussion, sometimes a heated argument with somebody else, and then all of a sudden they blow up out of the blue. And our tendency is to say, wow, there's something going on here. What's the matter with you? And yet, it's not about the issue that we're talking about whatsoever. It's about something deeper that is going on in that person's life. And somebody touched a nerve that sort of named what that issue is. If you've ever been in the presence of an active alcoholic and somebody sort of hits the nail on the head, whoa, you better look out, because it's not going to sit very well with them if they're not ready to do something about it. Any kind of a problem that people have, when it gets named and they're not ready to deal with it, look out. But what Jesus does is he is able to look past the problem and to see the person behind that particular situation and problem. There's a movie that was called Patch Adams. I'm sure a lot of you have seen it. And there's one scene where Robin Williams, as Patch Adams, goes in to see this old doctor that everybody else thinks is crazy, but he's a very wise man. And Patch is talking with him about what we really need to do and be as healers. And this is the dialogue that ensues.
How many do you see?
They have four fingers, aren't they?
No, no, no. Look at me. You're focusing on the problem. If you focus on the problem, you can't see the solution. Never focus on the problem. Look at me. How many do you see? No. Look beyond the fingers. How many do you see? Eight's a good answer. See what no one else sees. See what everyone else chooses not to see. Out of fear, conformity, and laziness. See the whole world anew each day. Now, it truth is, you're well on the way.
Look beyond the problem and see me. That is what Jesus does. They say, even before he heals that man, they're so impressed because this is a new teaching, somebody who teaches with authority. What's new about Jesus' teaching? He wasn't like the scribes or the rabbis, as the gospel says, because tradition was when you came into the synagogue and after the scripture was read, your authority came from all the other revered sources that already had authority. And so you quoted from the book of the prophet Isaiah, or as it says in the Torah, or as the revered Rabbi Fred might have said, that you were pulling your authority on these other things. Jesus does none of that. He gets his authority from himself, from his Father. And that authority is he himself. Remember when we looked at that word authority last year sometime, and we looked at the root of that as author. And it's that whole idea of even the phrase we have in our language, well, he wrote the book on that one, meaning he knows it all. And the authority comes from the person who is the author. I remember in high school, it used to drive me crazy. You would be in English class, and the professor would always say, "Now, what do you think the author meant by this?" Do you remember that? Well, drove me nuts. I remember one wiseacre in the back of the room one class time when that question was asked said, "Well, I don't know. Why don't you go ask the author?" We have talk shows now. We have everything where they will bring the author in, and our eyes are glued because that author, that person who wrote it, that person has all of the authority, and we listen to them because they are the ones who experience what they wrote. In Jesus, we have the author. We have the Word. We have the man who perfectly matches his words to his actions to his words. So if you want authority, look to him. Now that's the first half. Where there are people that we meet who have issues, who have problems. And we need to be very careful that we are not judgmental, but at the same time that we are not the enabling ones. That in our Christian charity, we are able to speak the truth with integrity. And when there are issues, we are willing to face up to them. Not just to see the problem, but to see the person behind that problem and be a part of their solution. Second part is this. That man with the unclean spirit is us. You know, psychologists tell us that 26% of our population has some sort of emotional problem. Well, look around you. If the two people to your left are normal and the one to your right is normal, guess what? We all have some sort of problem. We all have some, because we're not perfect. If there was something in me that was of God, if everything in me was of God, I would be God, and I'm not. I'm not perfect. I relate to that man because I know there are things in me that are not of God that I need to continually, in humility and dependence on God, ask for God's assistance and look to my Christian brothers and sisters to help me to be a better person. And that does not mean that God abandons me. It does not mean, hopefully, that my fellow brothers and sisters abandon me, because we are all the same in that regard. There's only one who ever did it perfectly, and he's the one who has the authority. There's another clip I'd like to show. It comes from a movie called Winn-Dixie. And in that movie, there is this little girl who is the heroine, and she meets up with this older island black lady, and she starts talking about things in her past that she's really not proud of. But in some way, she has been enabled by God to use the memory of those things to help her on her journey. Let's see if we can watch that clip.
See this tree?
Yeah. Hmm? Why are all those bottles on it?
To keep the ghost away.
What ghost?
Ghost of all the things I've done wrong.
You did that many things wrong.
More than that, baby girl.
But you're not a bad person.
Doesn't mean I haven't done bad things.
But there's whiskey bottles on there. And beer bottles.
That's right. I knew that. I'm the one who drank what was in them, and I'm the one who put them up there. Oh, baby girl. You know, a lot of folks have a problem with liquor and beer. Get to start drinking and can't get stopped.
Are you one of those people?
Yes, I am. But you know something? These days, I don't drink nothing stronger than coffee.
It's the whiskey and beer and wine. They make you do all those bad things that are ghosts now.
some of them. Some of them I would have done anyway, with or without the liquor and the beer. Till I learned.
Learned what?
Till I learned what was the most important thing.
What's that?
It's different for everyone. You gotta learn it on your own.
She leaves those ghosts of things that have happened in her past as a reminder of the more important thing that she has learned. And that last line is, we must figure out what that most important thing is for us. Hopefully for us, it is that relationship with a God who doesn't abandon us because we aren't perfect, but precisely because of that, wants to perfect us. I end with a story of a young man who sits in the pew in a church, and he has decided that there are things in his life that he wants to change, to follow God in a more precise and perfect way. And so he writes down a list of all of the things he's going to be doing to be a better person, and he signs his name to it. He takes it up to the altar and places it upon the altar, and then goes back and sits down in the pew, breathes a deep sigh that he has accomplished this, when he hears God speaking to him, and God says, go back up to that altar, pick up that piece of paper you wrote, and tear it up. So he does. He goes back and he sits down in the pew, and he hears God telling him once again, now take out another piece of paper and sign your name to it, which he does. Then God says, place that upon the altar and then go back and sit down, which he does. And then God says, now let me write down what we're going to work on. We have a God that will want to complete us, to perfect us. May we be open and willing to hear his voice each and every day. Let's take that to